You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
May the 7th, 2020. This is the National Day of Prayer, and our nation needs a lot of prayer right now for all those who are suffering because of the coronavirus epidemic, suffering because they have it, or they have friends or relatives who've had it or even passed away, and of course, the jobs and the businesses. Unemployment numbers, latest out, another 3 million. We now have 33 million unemployed in this nation. The economy and everything was going gangbusters until this came to our shores. Worldwide infection rate now at 3.8 million. Deaths, 265,000. In the U.S., 1.2 million infections, just under 74,000 deaths. And a strange event involving coronavirus and suicides, especially in Australia. I'll have that story for you later. And San Francisco doing what it says it needs to do for the homeless who might have the virus, and if they're drug addicts as well. Hey, drug addicts, note to you, note to the drug addicts, head to San Fran. The state will get you a hotel room, and they will deliver drugs and alcohol to your room. I kid you not. I can't make this stuff up. I'll have more details on that coming up a little bit later. We will, of course, have more on that Texas salon operator jailed because she opened last week. And, of course, the state of Texas will officially give permission for those salon operators and others, many other businesses, to open tomorrow. And she got sent to jail because she would not apologize to a judge. And that judge, I knew it yesterday. I've done some research since. He is definitely Democrat. Has called out Clarence Thomas in the past, mocking him for being a black man on the Supreme Court, and mainly because he's a Republican conservative. We're going to get into that. And also, the Bush event era, George Bush, after 9/11, some of the orders that were created after 9/11 during the Bush term can be credited with having us more prepared, better prepared for dealing with this pandemic. I've got a guest coming up who's going to give you more details on that and pointing out that if we had not had that the terrible tragedy of 9/11, we might not have been at all ready for what was coming to our shores this time around. And it's not just 9/11. It really goes back to anthrax attacks. We'll get into more detail on that. And, of course, the Mueller investigation papers are opened up, finally. And we have proof that Adam Schiff lied to Congress and the American public. Remember when he insisted, as they were setting up the Mueller investigation, I have evidence of collusion between Trump and the Russians. We now know, because the papers have been opened up, there's no such evidence. The Mueller report didn't find, quote, collusion, and collusion, by the way, is not listed as a crime. But aside from that, the Democrats were hanging everything on the Mueller report to destroy Donald Trump. That failed. And, of course, now they're looking for other options. But what are we going to do about those who set that Mueller plan in play? I say criminal charges should be coming. Tom Wellington will be joining us a little bit later with Wellington Environmental, giving us an update on the front line of making places of work, worship, hospitals, nursing homes safe as we move through COVID-19, especially as some of them get ready to reopen. And the left got some news today, I will guarantee you. They were applauding and smiling and jumping up and down with joy. The word came out of the White House, President Trump's valet, one of them anyway, that's assigned to him, has tested positive for COVID-19. And I know some of those on the left were saying, all right, we now have it in the West Wing. And if we could just get Trump infected. You think I'm joking? I don't think I'm joking. I think I'm correctly identified their attitude, because they truly want this nation to continue to suffer. We got all to cover the next 2 hours. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
COVID-19, coronavirus, is real. But despite all the hype, the fake news, there's no need to panic. Still, you want your environment safe for customers, employees, family. What can be done? How much would it cost? Who to trust? I can tell you, Wellington Environmental. Wellington Environmental would determine the best way to protect against COVID-19. Wellington Environmental can do it at a very reasonable cost. When it comes to trust, for more than 30 years, Wellington Environmental has been working with hospitals, nursing homes, universities, schools, even private homes. You don't last more than 30 years if you're not doing an excellent job. COVID-19 is a new health concern, but Wellington Environmental has the experience to give you peace of mind. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Early in the evening, just about supper time, over by the courthouse, it's starting to unwind. Four kids on the corner, trying to bring you up. Well, if it's a tune out, and he throws it on the hum. Down on the corner, out in the street.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Disagreement is fine in a democracy, but this isn't disagreement. This is persecution.
That is Senator Kennedy of Louisiana. Persecution. The plan behind the Mueller investigation. Not looking for justice, simply looking to persecute President Trump and those around him, to destroy the presidency from the beginning. Well, now we're beginning to see the legal foundation for Mueller's appointment, and the whole storyline is crumbling. It is falling fast. The Department of Justice releasing a less redacted copy of a memo that laid out the scope of former Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. In fact, it was sent by a title, The Scope of Investigation and Definition of Authority, August 2nd, 2017, to Mueller by Rod Rosenstein, Deputy Attorney General at that time. And that was the beginning. That was the beginning of the Trump-Russian collusion story. And they were going to push it. They were going to use that as an example. And they got Trump and several of his cohorts. The unredacted points now, of course, naming what we already knew, beginning with former Trump campaign foreign policy advisor Carter Page, tasking Mueller with determining, did Page commit a crime by, quote, colluding with Russian government officials as he interfered in the 2016 election? Mueller also tasked with investigating former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort. Did he also collude with the Russian government? I need to stop right there. Some folks are saying, oh, but Manafort was convicted. He's serving time in jail for the Russian collusion. No, no, no. Manafort ended up being convicted on various financial crimes, tax evasion, bank fraud, sentenced to 7.5 years. had nothing to do, nothing, with the allegations of Russian collusion. And the same memo wanted the collusion allegation to include campaign volunteer worker George Papadopoulos. Find out, was he an unregistered agent of the government of Israel? Just another attack on another member of the Trump team. And, of course, the memo wanted Mueller to push for questions regarding Michael Flynn, the former Trump national security advisor, fired less than a month into the job. They wanted to know, did he commit crimes by talking to Russian government officials during the transition? That was trying to bring in the old Logan Act. Been on the books in 1799, rarely used, not for criminal. The whole point of that Logan Act at that time was before telephones. Someone could show up in Mexico or Brazil or Germany and say, I represent the United States and we want to make a deal and a pact and a treaty with you. That's not at all what was done, but they were going to use that. And then, of course, whether he lied to the FBI about contacts he had with the Russian government. And they caught him on perjury. But it was a perjury trap. We've all seen now by previous papers, they were out to get him. In fact, the FBI agents sent over to inquire and question Flynn in the White House basically ended up saying, there's nothing here, we might as well close the case. 2 points. They went over there contrary to protocol. Protocol would have had them notifying the White House counsel we're coming over to talk to Flynn, and yes, this is an investigation. James Comey, FBI director at that time, acknowledges, yeah, we didn't follow protocol. They didn't have any interest in following protocol. They were trying to get in there and see if they could sniff something out. But then they came out and said, we don't have anything. And they were ready to shut the case. They were shutting the case until FBI agent Stroke Smurf shouted out, don't close it, don't close it. Seventh floor is involved in this. By seventh floor, he meant the hierarchy at the FBI. Now, was he talking about Deputy Director McCabe, which was above him? And was he also talking about James Comey, who was the director above McCabe? Was he talking about it going back all the way to the Obama White House? We've never had those questions really answered. We have not had them answered because the way the Democrats have been jumping around on all of this. They do not want to hold hearings. They don't want to have a full investigation. Their Mueller case blew up in their face, and they had nothing. They were banking so heavily on that to destroy the Trump administration. It was basically a coup. That was truly what they were trying to do, to oust the president duly elected by the American people, verified by the Electoral College. They wanted to get him out at any cost, any way possible. So what if we had to fabricate a little bit? So we'd pass a word around here and there. And that's why you had Adam Schiff, the House Intel Committee chairman, went out and stated publicly over and over again and on various interviews and in testimony to Congress, I have evidence of collusion. The papers released now show there's no evidence because there is no collusion. Adam Schiff was lying. And all those around him, all the way back to the Attorney General at that time, Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein, who authorized the Mueller investigation, were all part of that mission. Well, now that we have new information being made public, Senator Lindsey Graham comments.
The legal foundation for Mueller's appointment is crumbling. The memo to Mueller from Rosenstein was given to me today or yesterday by Barr, fully unredacted, virtually unredacted. So now we know that the scope of the investigation was to look at Carter Page, Flynn, Papadopoulos, and Manafort as to whether or not they were working with the Russians. Now, this is in August of 2017. You nailed it. In January 2017, the subsource disavowed the dossier, and without the dossier, there's no warrant. So they knew that the Carter Page thing was a fraud. January the 4th, 2017, the FBI field office wanted to close the case against Flynn. We've got Papadopoulos on record denying working with the Russians, saying to do so would be treason. So the foundation for the Mueller investigation is crumbling.
Crumbling. And a senior administration official is being quoted by Fox News as stating that Adam Schiff is in panic mode. Panic mode. All of this happening because 6,000 pages of transcripts pertaining to interviews conducted by the committee in 2017 and 2018 released, and much of it unredacted. And there's more to come. There's more to come. Some 53 transcripts are eligible for release, according to a source familiar with them. This would include specific interviews with former Trump attorney Michael Cohen, his confidant at one time, Roger Stone, Trump Jr., Bannon. And also to be released, according to one source, transcripts for interviews with Obama officials, which is key. That would include Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, former Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Put her under oath, say, tell us again about this meeting you happened to have, just by her circumstance that you had with Bill Clinton in Arizona, before Hillary was given her free pass. That'll be part of the questions they'll get into as well, or should have anyway. We'll see what the transcripts show. Also, former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. Interviews with him will be released. Former Ambassador to the UN Samantha Power. Former National Security Advisor Susan Rice. Former Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates, former Obama advisor Benjamin Rhodes, and former Obama counselor and Hillary Clinton campaign manager John Podesta. Two sources that say they have looked at the transcripts already say the transcripts show a total lack of evidence, despite Schiff personally going out saying he had more than circumstantial evidence that there was collusion. Apparently, not one of those 53 witnesses could provide any evidence of collusion. The same ones that were popping up on CNN and NNN at the time, such as former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper, indicating, oh, we got something nasty, nasty going on here. Again, Senator Kennedy of Louisiana.
His investigators called 53 witnesses in secret. Not a single one of them said there was any collusion. In fact, they all said, we don't have any evidence of collusion. It was all done in secret. Chairman Schiff knew it. He read the transcripts, and he walked out in front of God and country and the American people and said, I have direct evidence of collusion. Now, you know, if you and I lie to Congress, it's perjury. If Congress lies to us, it's politics. It's not, that's third world country stuff. And at the whole time, Chairman Schiff is lecturing all of us about the rule of law. And he's lying to the American people.
Lying to the American people. There's already obviously a call for a full congressional investigation. And one of those to be put on the stand would have to be Adam Schiff. So, yes, if the source quoting to Fox News is that he's in a panic, it'd be understandable. I wouldn't be surprised if you look and you realize you got a little wet stain there on your pants. What did you? Oh, I see. You saw the report coming out. Oh, I understand what happened. And by the way, Attorney General William Barr is saying that President Trump did the right thing to dismiss Intelligence Community Inspector General Atkinson. That's the guy who alerted Congress about Trump's July 2019 phone call with the Ukrainian President Zelensky. That led to the president's impeachment. Attorney General Barr says from the vantage point of the Department of Justice, Atkinson interpreted a statute which is fairly narrow that gave him jurisdiction over wrongdoing by intel people and tried to turn it over to a commission to explore anything in the government. In other words, looking for another opportunity to attack Trump. Now, when he was fired, dismissed last week, Atkinson said he was disappointed and saddened. And House Intel Committee Chairman Adam Schiff, again, who led not only getting that collusion set up, but Trump impeachment, he had some comments about that. I want to share that with you. And I want to tell you how mainstream media is treating the revelations that all of this has been bogus and not a shred of evidence, not one shred. And yet the way this mainstream media news source is looking at it. Stand by, please.
Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton sponsors this segment. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. I'll see you at Red Fitness Lounge. Get details at redfitnesslounge.com. redfitnesslounge.com.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
That's pretty much what President Trump told Intelligence Community Inspector General Michael Atkinson last week. Hit the road, Jack. We're out of here. And Attorney General Barr says you were perfect in getting rid of him because he went over his authority. And as I said, Chairman Schiff, House Intel Committee Chairman Adam Schiff, who led the impeachment in Trump's trial before the Senate, accusing the president of, quote, another blatant attempt to gut the independence of the intelligence community and retaliate against those who dare to expose presidential wrongdoing. You take that phrase in his statement, retaliate, daring to expose, and put it up against the remarks of Adam Schiff when he insisted, I have more than circumstantial evidence. I have proof of collusion involving Trump and Russia, and the report released yesterday being made public, no such proof exists. None. Oh, and you want to know how the mainstream media treats this? I'm looking right now at the opening Facebook page for CNN. Don't open it on your computers. I don't know. It may blow your computers up. I have safeguarded mine, but I'm doing the best I can. And I'm looking at their Facebook page, their opening line. I'm looking for, let me see, where's their story on the papers being released yesterday? And Adam Schiff's remarks, I'm looking, is there even a quote from Adam Schiff to say that, we're still investigating or what? Let me see here. The top line now is Trump administration rejects CDC guidance on reopening. They've got somebody telling them that 17-page report, guidance provided by the CDC, is not going to be followed step by step, so they consider the Trump administration is rejecting it. As if they're going to endanger the world and you. That's not true. What else? Let me see. Is there anything on here about... Oh, they also put right in the center of the page. You can't miss it. And I told you earlier, because they're laughing and they're happy about this. Trump's personal valet tests positive for COVID-19. I told you they were joyful over that. They're so happy they got COVID-19 in the West Wing. Now, the president has since been retested along with Vice President Pence. They are still negative. But the left was so glad to see that. And CNN, again, putting that on its front page of its Facebook. I'm looking at their full open page, front page, half foot. We've got the coronavirus story. One commentator saying Trump's response is unhinged. And, of course, Trump's personal valet test positive. You can't overlook that one. And the Supreme Court throwing out convictions in New Jersey's Bridgegate scandal. That's another big one. But there is nothing about these papers being released showing there was no proof of any evidence. None. I'm going to say I actually thought they'd put something in there. I mean, come on. Mueller's report was all over your front page every day. But I'm even looking down the bottom. There's nothing. In other words, in their view, if we don't report it, it doesn't exist. It does, and we're going to continue to hammer it. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we want to talk about some events that took place since 9/11 that made us ready to deal with this pandemic.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
The tragedy of 9/11 cost us lives, but also was a major wake-up call to the nation, much as Pearl Harbor was when it happened. This was our modern-day Pearl Harbor. And from that event, various actions were initiated, which have come into play and been extremely beneficial in dealing with COVID-19. There's a piece that's been written in the National Interest publication. Co-author Brian Finch joins us. Glad to have you on board, Brian.
Great to be here, Larry. Nice to talk to you.
The title of this is talking about how the Bush-era actions have boosted coronavirus response efforts. Give me a thumbnail sketch, then we'll get into detail.
You got it. So, you know, what's real interesting, Larry, is when we all think about 9/11, most of us think about New York and Washington, terrible tragedies, Pennsylvania with the planes crashing. But 9/11 was more than just that. A lot of us forget that there were also serious anthrax attacks. We still don't even really know who committed those anthrax attacks, but they struck all across the eastern seaboard, and there was a wave. If you may recall, anytime someone spilled a packet of sugar, they were worried that it was an anthrax attack. And so it wasn't just planes, it wasn't just car bombs, it was also biological, chemical threats and the like. And Bush administration and Congress said, you know, when we create this Department of Homeland Security and when we re-engineer U.S. government, we got to make sure we're handling all threats, not just the physical ones, but we got to deal with the biological and the others. And that that has led us to today and some of the preparations that are helping us through this really difficult time.
So, for example, you point out in your paper that was also your co-author, Laura Rice or Reese, I'm not sure.
Reese,
okay. Both of them with the Heritage Foundation. You point out that in creating the DHS, the Homeland Security Act of 2002 transferred a number of biodefense capabilities from other cabinet agencies into the new department. And we knew, we obviously, intel was scattered everywhere. I mean, that was big remake as well, was it not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It brought together 22 different agencies, rolled them into DHS. It was the largest reorganization of the U.S. government since after World War II when the Pentagon was created.
And to that extent, because everybody had their own little fiefdom, I've got this piece of information. I don't want to share it with anybody. It's my piece of information, and I will use it to get more for my agency and make us look better. Is that right, exactly what was going on?
Oh, yeah. I wish to say we had 9/11 had fixed that. Still got some of that going on, but it's certainly better than it was.
So one of the things that have you say came out of this, part of it had to deal with the transfer of the Federal Emergency Management Agency and also the National Pharmaceutical Stockpile into a new department. Tell me how that plays out.
Yes, sir. So FEMA before 9/11 was an independent agency reported directly to the president. But the idea between Congress and the White House, we got to create one agency that deals with all these threats. It's going to be the one when you're worried about a terrorist driving down your street and one that you're worried about responding when something terrible goes wrong, and whether it's man-made or natural. So hurricanes to terrorist attacks, all that's got to be in one place. One person who's responsible, one budget to manage all of that. And didn't quite get 100% of the way there, but they organized a lot of that into the Department of Homeland Security. And as I wrote in the article with Laura, my excellent co-author, that included taking FEMA, putting it in the Department of Homeland Security, and taking that National Pharmaceutical Stockpile and renaming it the Strategic National Stockpile. And interestingly, it's not just a rename. This isn't just a rebranding like you see at a corporate organization when they change owners. This was an expansion and a reinforcement of the mission to dramatically bulk up the stockpile and also really get FEMA on its feet.
So also in the process, they created Project BioShield. That's probably one of the lead events that are helping us right now in dealing with the coronavirus.
Yes, sir. That is absolutely right. So when they hear about emergency funding for vaccines and countermeasures, most of that money is going through Project BioShield and the other programs that have followed it and built on it, including the over at Health and Human Services, what they call BARDA, the Biomedical Advanced Research Development Agency. That's where a lot of those funding dollars go in order to help companies, whether it's, you know, a big pharmaceutical company or usually a small one, because they're the ones most interested in taking the risk on developing these countermeasures, these drugs, et cetera. It funnels through that organization to develop a whole wide suite of different vaccines and treatments. There's a lot of different things they need to address. It's very challenging.
Yeah, and that particular avenue, when you go through that door, the idea of providing an opportunity of using some of these developments, even though they're not fully cleared by FDA testing protocols, it, as you point out, is one of the first steps to dealing with the pandemic. I mean, you got to declare it, then you got to do something about it.
You got it. You got it. I mean, that's exactly what's happening. This is going to be an emergency situation. You don't want to sit there and have one of those situations where you're like a commercial you see when you're watching a football game or a golf match, and you hear a list of 37 different potential side effects that are all vetted and carefully managed. I mean, we want to be careful that this drug doesn't do much more harm than good. But in an emergency situation where Americans are dying by thousands per day, you want to get anything you think has a reasonable chance out there in order to save people. And it's really one of those, it's no different than you hear people talking about orphan drugs or experimental treatments to help them out of a really dangerous situation. This was intended to say, we got to find those that look promising. They think that we look promising enough, we're going to give them emergency authority to get out there and try and save lives.
You're listening to Brian Finch with the Heritage Foundation, publishing in the National Interest on how actions taken after 9/11 got us ready for the coronavirus, but nothing was addressed at that time. And, of course, trying to look way down the horizon, I mean down the line of the future, of relying so much on China for these drugs we're talking about right now.
Yeah, that, you know, that continues to be an issue. I mean, Larry, it's beyond me in many ways, but I will tell you, you know, one of the first things that was really interesting back in February, which seems like years ago at this point, was that the FDA had to pull a lot of its inspectors out of Chinese pharmaceutical factories. People don't realize a lot of our drugs come from overseas. And it comes from actually Europe and Asia, and that's for a whole host of reasons, including worrying about lawsuits from those types of injuries. But a lot of our drugs, a lot of the stuff you buy at the grocery or prescribed by your doctor, that comes through factories in China, and it has to be cleared by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
Well, when they were, I was going to say, when they're setting all that up back in the Bush era, though, they weren't looking about where we're having to rely on some of these drugs, even if they're coming through untested.
No, sir. Right. You're absolutely right.
So this has, unfortunately, unveiled a flaw within that. But, you know, we are learning step by step, hopefully learning going forward. I want to share something with you and get a quick comment from you. There's a piece a Chicago loyal listener sent me from National Review called The War Between Experience and Credentials, and basically pointing out that the way we've gone about dealing with this crisis, listening to various models and number crunching and maybe ignoring facts or not. We don't know if the death count's going to be 200,000, 100,000, 300,000 or more, and basically comes to the conclusion that we have a lot of science without humility as these various folks try to step forward. And it says the inner fighting between agencies, scientists, and some of the agencies you're talking about could lead to more disaster. You think that's possible with all this? Even though we're trying to be cohesive, that there's still too much feuding between experience and credentials?
You know, I think that's 100% true. And it's funny you talk about this, Larry. I was just having this discussion last night with some other people about you hear a lot of claims regarding, well, we've got to follow the science. We've got to follow the science. And listen, I am a man of science. I didn't march for it, but I certainly believe in it. I think it's absolutely critical. But just because a scientist pronounces something, says something, it doesn't mean that it's 100% correct or that there isn't more to the story. And you're right. National Review being one of my favorite publications, you know, they always have great stories in there and great insights, and they're 100% right. There's different scientific opinions on lots of different issues, especially when it comes to COVID. There are some things that really are settled, but there's a lot that we don't know.
There's one line in here that really stands out. Science without humility, without the constant audit of experience, pragmatism, common sense, remains a parlor game. In other words, we're just sitting around. We're kind of, you know, guessing in the dark.
I 100% agree with that. And I would also say, too, science without humility or I don't want to say social competence because that's not the right way to phrase it. But without the experience of smart political leaders, it can take you in very strange and unfortunate directions. And I would say in particular, look, I'm not advocating for unnecessarily early openings in the economy or anything like that. That's a discussion for another day. But I do say, you know, the numbers are one thing, but we also got to weigh the impact on the rest of the economy as well and people's livelihoods. And people's health, too, by keeping everybody indoors and closed. And so you're 100% right. We've got to look at all these things, and it can go back to the article with respect to getting drugs out early. Yes, there may be some side effects, but if it can save lots and lots of lives, it may be worth it. And then when we're looking at the humility of science, too, that's why, you know, scientists report to elected leaders who are accountable. Science is not unaccountable.
Absolutely. Should not be, anyway. Brian, I appreciate you taking time to be with us and giving us some details of what we learned from 9/11 that did benefit. I appreciate it very much, sir.
Oh, it's an honor to be on. Thank you, Larry.
You bet. Brian Finch, Heritage Foundation. And despite all of these efforts of keeping everybody contained, New York suddenly realized most of their cases, or many of them, involved folks who stayed home. And then what you hear about Australia.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
People, keep on learning. Soldier, keep on warring.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
As I was mentioning, as we were closing out that segment, in New York, they realized that the majority of the new COVID-19 hospitalizations in the state of New York are those who stayed home. They didn't go out. They were staying home. And then they came down sick with COVID-19. By staying home, I mean they weren't really going out frequenting, and 96% of those apparently also had some underlying health issues. They weren't frontline workers, weren't riding the subways, not stuck in jails or homeless shelters, but then they were still walking into hospitals with COVID-19. 66% at home before entering the hospital. So now I'm trying to figure out, well, something else is going on here. Of course, part of it is they were out of work, retired, and weren't leaving their home on a daily basis. And then you've got some parts of the world where this lockdown in various countries, as well as this nation, of course, has been apparently extremely hard on some. This is a shocking number. A tally from Johns Hopkins University revealing that since the start of 2020, Wuhan virus, claiming about 252,000 lives, and they show almost 375,000 suicides. More suicides than claimed by the virus. And Australia is apparently one of the ones that has a big uptick. They're predicting the deaths to continue to exceed any deaths by the virus that suicide will be blamed for most. They're expecting a 50% rise of the national suicide rate because those having to stay home and not being able to do what they want apparently feel, well, this, I got to take my life. Where do you come up with that thought? You cannot envision anyone that's pushed down that far. I can't. And I'm not trying to pass judgment. They obviously need help, but for some reason, they're looking at suicide. They're now estimating youth suicides, of course, going to make up nearly half of the number. Where they normally have no more than 1,500 suicides annually, they're looking at 3,000 plus. And they're blaming it on the lockdown and the fear of COVID-19. The LA City Council has been trying to get the homeless off the streets, take care of them, and they've been wanting local hotels to step up and provide rooms. Well, they don't want to do that. The Ritz-Carlton downtown LA said no, and they have luxury condo residences. And, of course, that hotel gets millions of dollars in tax breaks from LA over the years. And the Ritz-Carlton says, no, we don't want homeless people dumped in here. Now the LA City Council voting to name all the hotels that refused to house the homeless. And here's the next, this is the scary part. This is the scary part. The next consideration is commandeering. The city of LA commandeering the Ritz-Carlton or other hotels and insisting you will take these folks. You got to watch this overreach. And LA, of course, being right in the middle of the blue country, all that. They would do it. They would do it if they get the chance. They have already placed something like 1,500 in hotels. They're trying to put 15,000 in hotels. And the Ritz-Carlton on one of the list. Now, some obviously not quite to that level, 4 or 5 star, but they're fancy. They don't want to be included, understandably. That's in L.A., and then go to San Fran. San Fran has also had a policy of housing, getting hotels to take them in. In fact, the city had set a deadline to lease 8,250 hotel rooms for the homeless. They haven't been able to do it. So far, no formal punishment for failing in San Fran if you're not going to give them a hotel room for the homeless. I mean, it's to be paid. It will be paid, but still, you're taking them and dropping them into these hotels. Governor Newsom said last month California acquired more than 15,000 hotel rooms to shelter the homeless during the pandemic. Now they're trying to get them located. They got an agreement with Motel 6, keeping a light on for them in Motel 6. And then they point out the federal government agreeing to pay 75% of these costs of housing. Now, what do you think a room in the Ritz-Carlton is going to cost for you twice as you go, and then also the federal dollars are used? And then here's the other issue in San Fran. You want to know why they're so messed up? The city, San Fran, is giving alcohol, marijuana, and methadone to homeless addicts once they get them in these hotels. In fact, a guy describing himself as formerly a homeless addict in recovery tweeted out, "I just found out that homeless placed in hotels in San Francisco are being delivered alcohol, weed, and methadone because they identified as an addict, alcoholic, and they're getting it for free." There's enabling. Yeah, go to San Fran if you're a drug addict. You'll get a room, maybe at the Ritz, and they'll bring the drugs to you. Next hour, the latest on the Texas salon operator who was jailed because she opened early, but more importantly, she refused to apologize to the Democrat judge ruling over her. It's all coming up next hour.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.